ComingToBook.com.
Hello to everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, February 20th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host. So we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me to kick off a new week here. We've only got one guest today. That is Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com. For our Handicapping the Hardwood segment, we're going to do a little bit of an elongated segment here today to make up for not being able to do anything last week. And, of course, there's plenty to talk about here in college basketball as we get closer to the end of the regular season, which, of course, means postseason play, both for conference tournaments and March Madness. One thing I wanted to mention here before I bring Kyle onto today's show, Saturday in the NHL was phenomenal for us. It was absolutely outstanding. A lot of the things that we talked about on the show came through for us. Those of you that were playing along with those should have turned a really nice profit. So we get into Sunday, and you know, the biggest downer of the weekend here from an NHL standpoint was that game last night between San Jose and Boston. That one set up exactly the kind of way that we wanted it to. San Jose coming off or heading into the bye, Boston coming off the bye, had been a really, really strong angle for us. The Sharks lose, and they didn't look good in the process either. It was a game that I watched pretty much the majority of. I was really taken aback by Boston's speed. I didn't realize they were that fast of a team, but they came to play. Now, that snapped a streak. Actually, Sunday snapped a streak of 13 straight games where teams lost coming out of the bye. So it had been a very, very profitable angle for us. But as always, great things come to an end. So what I wanted to talk about here on today's show before I bring Kyle on the air is that maybe you've got this system that feels like it's outstanding. And then this one obviously was. I mean, this was rattling off winners at a very, very high clip at a very high rate. Also some good plus money prices in there as well. Well, Buffalo lost in their first game or in their game heading into the break. Dallas won. San Jose lost. Columbus lost. Vancouver lost. So that angle of going into the bye week didn't work out for us on Sunday. And then the first game out of the bye certainly didn't work for us in that spot with the Bruins. So what I wanted to talk about a little bit here in this in the intro to today's show is that you still need to be really mindful of bankroll management. And this is a prime example because, yes, we had the perfect situation. If you stepped out on this play, you cut into some of your profits that you got on Friday and Saturday in the NHL, which, hey, you still turned a profit as long as your bet sizing was responsible, but also you cut into it a little bit if you did step out on this play. So it was a good learning opportunity. It's unfortunate that it came the way that it did because we were rolling right along and that was a great spot. But, you know, you can never get too high here in this industry. And that's why we talk about, you know, the best in the world aiming for 54, 55, 56%, because those things happen. There is variance. There is bad luck. Things just don't always work out in your favor. So we had that spot there with San Jose and Boston on Sunday night. And look, it is what it is. You know, it's a learning opportunity. Did we do something wrong in that game? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. We played along with the systems that were working. Boston just showed up to play. And one of the things I was talking with Jimmy Doomhands about, and him and I have been going back and forth a lot here during this run, is that now this bye week thing is getting a ton of play. Teams know about it. Teams have seen how badly the other teams in the league are struggling in these spots. So maybe that changes the dynamic a little bit. Maybe we need to adjust. We found a honey hole for a few days. Maybe now we need to make some adjustments. And it's an important lesson to learn as a handicapper that you always need to be adjusting, always need to be reevaluating. No matter what kind of run you're on, it's going to come to an end at some point. And it's how you bounce back, how you respond, how your bankroll looks when it comes to an end because you've been betting responsibly. Those are all of the things that matter the most here. And I think that was a good way to start off this show. It was a sobering reminder of what can happen in this industry, but we really racked it up before that, and hopefully we can keep doing the same here in the NHL this week. But I'll see if today's first guest, Mr. Kyle Hunter of HunterSportsPicks.com, has anything that he wants to add to that, because Kyle, you know as well as I do that you can get really hot at this thing. It can turn on a dime. Sometimes it's short term, sometimes you struggle for a little while, but it's all about that bounce back ability.
Yeah, sure. You never want to get too high or too low. You can get on a really bad run. You can get on a really good run. You keep trying to find those good situations and try to put yourself in a good spot. You know, full disclosure, I've been on a bad run here lately in college basketball. I've been doing well in the other sports, been have been doing badly in college basketball, some taking some really, really bad beats. You know, it happens. I mean, it's hard. You look back and you see some of the games and you wonder how on earth you lost that game. You know, it's not necessarily that you handicap the game wrong just because you lost either. I mean, as you were talking about with the San Jose game last night in NHL, I don't think that was a bad handicap. I just think that, you know, it didn't work out. Sometimes that happens. You know, and as far as the NHL thing, I do agree with you that it's a little bit concerning how much it's being talked about now about the bye week. You know, when everybody starts talking about it, when everybody on Twitter is tweeting about it, you know they're going to be adjusting the prices on it and the players are going to hear about it. That kind of thing starts getting around a little too much.
Well, and again, I mean, it's just one of those things where this is an ever-changing industry. You always have to be adapting. The odds makers are doing that. The bookmakers are doing that. And that's also our responsibility as the bettors and handicappers to do that. So, you know, like I said, I thought it was just it's an unfortunate way to start off the show here for this week, but it is something that certainly needs to be said. And I figure it was a good introduction, Kyle, to your segment as well, because you've done this for a long time. You're a high-volume guy. You have those ups and downs. You know what this is all about, and I knew that you would be able to speak to it as well.
Yeah, you know, you're always going to have ups and downs no matter what. I mean, if you're good at a sport, you're hitting 55% on high volume long time. That's really, really good. You know, even if you're hitting 54%, you're really good at this. Let's remember that most people are losing long term. And, you know, you're trying to get that little bit of an extra edge to give you that extra 1% or whatever it may be over the course of the year. You put yourself in those kind of situations over the course of the season, it is going to end up in your favor more often than it's not. But, you know, you can look back and after a game and see several that, you know, just didn't work out very well, and you can say, what did I do wrong? You didn't necessarily do anything wrong. You know, it's just it is still, you know, a bet. It's still a gamble. It still, you know, has to play out the right way. And, you know, you can go through runs where – it seems like it's not worth it, but you got to try to not get too low when you're in those bad slumps.
Well, and I think something that a lot of people don't really realize about this industry, and this is something that I've tried to convey here on this show, and I know our handicapper guests have talked about it as well, that, you know, people sort of wonder why there are such long hours here when it comes to betting on sports. Because a lot of people are just thinking, well, you know, all you're doing is updating your models and you're just spitting out numbers and then playing those accordingly. But there's a lot more that goes into it than just that. I mean, when you talk about long hours, when you talk about, you know, making these adjustments, tracking the bets that you've made, all of this plays into it. And I know that when it comes to work ethic and long hours, not many people do it better than you do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I put in really long hours with this. I take my job very seriously. You know, I'm several things that make me take long hours. One is I'm really dedicated to my job. You know, that would be the case regardless of what the job was. But, you know, I'm certainly dedicated to this job. Number two, I'm really competitive. I'm very, very competitive. Honestly, too much for my own good. You know, outside of just this, you know, I'm competitive in everything I do. I'm competitive in life. You know, I have a feeling that my two kids are going to be so competitive, it's unbelievable. But, you know, it's one of those things that it's good for you because you want to get that extra edge and that competition. You know, when you play sports growing up, it really drives you. And it still drives me, you know. That can make it hard sometimes when you're losing. You know, you get a little bit too down on yourself. I have to try to fight that. But the thing is, I'm always looking for that extra new edge to try to see you know, where the adjustments need made. What am I doing wrong? What am I doing right? I've talked about before, I go in after the bet has been made and grade how that has been handicapped to just kind of see, you know, am I getting these right or am I getting them wrong? Because sometimes even the ones that lose were good handicaps. You know, another thing I do is that I try to be extremely responsive to emails, tweets, things like that. I've kind of decided when I started out that I wanted to be different than the average guy. You know, I feel like the average guy in this industry is not very responsive. They kind of just beat their chest and talk about how good they've done lately, talk about their recent run in whatever sport. You know, it'd be easy for me to jump on here and talk about, you know, how hot I've been in NBA or the NHL plays that I've made. But, college basketball has been really bad lately, and that's a sport that I kind of pride myself on being very good. So, you know, I'm not going to jump on here and talk about, you know, how amazing I've been doing. I think that, you know, sometimes people in this industry give the industry a bad name by, you know, just kind of shifting to whatever they're hot in and not talking about what they're cold in. You know, there's not as much transparency. And like I said, I also like to be responsible. I certainly get quite a few emails, quite a few tweets, things like that, especially when I'm not doing well. But, you know, I try to respond to everybody, you know, unless it's a personal attack that's way out of line and there's just no way you can respond to it. I try to give everything the time of the day, you know, and I try to show that I'm different than the average. And then also you have to remember just the day-to-day stuff, you know, updating models, updating your numbers, looking back at trends and systems, that's going to take time. Now, if you were just betting those games yourself, if I was just betting these games myself, it wouldn't take me that long. So that's something for you know, listeners to remember is that, you know, just actually placing the bet after I've changed those models up and look at it, it wouldn't take that long. But I have to do all my write-ups. I have to give people a reason for why I'm picking that game. I always wonder why people would buy from a handicapper who doesn't give them a reason for why they're playing what they are. You know, I feel like it's only fair to somebody to see, you know, see inside why you're making that play. So I try to give pretty decent write-ups as far as why I made that play. Then you have to put up sales so somebody can buy something. Obviously, that's how I make my money, or partially how I make my money. Updating the power rankings, looking at injury reports, you know, making notes for spots. You know, I go through and try to look at schedules and mark spots that I want to play ahead weeks in advance. And so, you know, I have to keep notes for that, things like that. And I'd say, you know, I probably only spend about 10% of my time on sales. And that's my least favorite. You know, I just flat out, I don't really like selling. You know, I'd much rather get on here and talk about, you know, how a system works or just talk about breaking down a game than I would sell something. You know, I have to do some of that, though, and certainly that takes some time. And, you know, last but not least, obviously, being a high-volume handicapper makes me take more time and have longer hours than somebody would who doesn't have as many plays. Because if you're putting out, say, you know, 11 plays, 13 plays on a Saturday, then you're doing a lot of write-ups. You're putting up a lot of promotional packages, things like that. It takes extra time when you put up a lot of plays. You know, I'm a pretty high-volume guy in a lot of sports. And like I said, you know, I'm just very dedicated to this. I'm very conscientious about my work. You know, when I'm doing poorly, I always hate that I'm losing for the people who've bought. It gets to me some, and it's something I have to try to deal with. But, you know, there are some long hours that go into this. If you want to be good at this, you have to put in long hours because the edges are small.
Yeah, they definitely are. I'll give you a couple minutes there to get a drink and make sure they can keep your voice throughout the segment here because I hear you're still on the comeback trail there when it comes to that. But I mean, another element of this is simply watching games. I mean, that's part of your workday, you know. And if you are an amateur handicapper who's doing this, you've got a day job, but you want to come home, crack a beer or two, watch some of these games. I guarantee that you're sitting there, and as you're watching, you're analyzing the game. You're picking up on nuggets that you can use going forward. You know, like I said about the Boston Bruins when I watched that game last night, I had no idea that they were that fast. I hadn't been able to watch them a whole lot. They had tremendous speed on the forecheck. Great speed through the neutral zone. That's something I can keep in mind for future games. If I see a matchup advantage, you know, where I know that they're playing a team that doesn't play with a lot of speed in the defensive zone, can't exactly exit the zone very well because their defensemen don't move the puck that quickly, that's an advantage for me. And I got that from watching the game. And, you know, that's kind of an extension of the workday of a professional handicapper is watching for those things that can be carried over to future events. So, yeah, it's not just updating models. It's not just doing write-ups. It's everything. You know, it's, like you said, monitoring the wires for injury reports, watching the odds screen to make sure that you're getting the best price because you're also a bettor. You're not just a handicapper. And you know, there are some things that you can't release to the public, but there are some things that you can play where it comes into your target range very briefly. You know, you can't sell that to everybody. It wasn't a widely available number, but it's something that you can personally play. So, you know, the long hours, I think that, you know, people just sort of underestimate all of the different layers that there are to this job. And, you know, I mean, you keep finding more and more of them every day, too. And also, like I talked about with Brad Powers last week when we talked about Chris Andrews at the South Point, with the college football timeline accelerated even more now, that just contributes even more to the workload here at this time of the year.
Sure, yeah, it speeds everything up. It's nice, but it also, you know, creates quite a bit of work for you. You know, I think it would be easier as a handicapper. You know, the easier way out would be to, you know, just be the sales guy, to jump out there and, you know, sell yourself constantly. But if you're actually behind the scenes, updating your numbers, you know, being really responsive to people, trying to find that extra edge, that's going to take you a lot more time than it is to, you know, get out there and just try to sell yourself. So I think the guys who are the most honest and transparent guys are going to be the guys who put in the longer hours. You know, that's going to be the guys who truly love sports, who love sports betting, you know, not just want to sell. And I think, you know, you have a lot of them on this show. And I think that's certainly been a positive for the listeners.
All right, well, let's move on to some more topics here. And we had a listener question about home court advantage relative to college basketball. And I just gave a very quick answer. You know, Twitter's kind of limited, 140 characters. So we can expand on this a little bit more here. But you know, when it comes to home court advantage for college basketball, basically what I told him is that you have a standard number, and then you start to make adjustments based off of that.
Yeah, you know, three is a fair place to start. I think a little bit more than 3 points is probably the average home court advantage in college basketball. But, you know, you try to look to see what kind of things go into the home court advantage. And I jotted down a few of them. You know, where I start is fan support. Obviously, that's important. You know, you go to a place and nobody's there, you know, and you as the road team, you have just as many people there as the home team. It's not a very good home court advantage. So that's obviously important. Another thing that I like to look at is how hard is it for opponents to get to that place? You know, sometimes you get these places where, you know, I'm very close to an airport, or it's just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, everybody's done, you know, you've all gone someplace where you drive to that spot and you feel like you're never going to get there. Some of these places are that way, and it gives them a better home court advantage because of that. Another one is, you know, what's unique about their gym or the shooting backdrop? Places where they have a unique shooting backdrop are really, really important to look for. You know, if you find something when you're watching a game where it's like, wow, this court's a lot different than the average court, then that helps the home team because those road teams are not used to playing on that. The home team is. Elevation is a huge one. You know, when you're playing in altitude, you're used to playing in altitude. The other team usually isn't. That home court's worth a lot in those places. And, you know, distance from the other schools in the conference, you know, we've talked about this some in the past with, you know, say Conference USA or the American Athletic Conference. Those schools are way, way apart. You know, some of these other conferences, say Missouri Valley, conferences like that, Big Ten even, I mean, well, before they expanded. But a lot of these conferences, they're pretty close. You know, say the SoCon, everybody's really close to each other. But you get an American Athletic, Conference USA, and that's some really long travel spots. And then especially when you get teams in a back-to-back situation a long way from home, that's a good spot to play the home team. But home court advantage is a lot that goes into it for me. I try to update my numbers a couple times throughout the course of the season. And then every year before the start of the season, I go back and look and see what do I need to change. So three updates for me for home court advantage. And most teams fall in that curve of, you know, three and a half, points, but there are certainly a decent amount of teams that are up in that 5-point range and quite a few teams that are down in that 2-point range as well. So, you know, it's pretty standard 3 to 3.5 points, but there are some things that can make it quite a bit higher or a little bit lower.
Well, another thing too to mention here, and this is important as we get into conference tournament time where some of the early round games are on campus sites, some of these tournaments are held fully at neutral sites, but you know, when you talk about conferences like the ACC, like the Big 12, they have two Division I revenue sports, basketball and football. They are flying everywhere, unless it's like Duke to North Carolina. Obviously, you're not going to fly from Durham to Chapel Hill. But, you know, they're flying to Louisville. They're flying, you know, up to Syracuse. They're flying down to Miami. And some of these other schools, it's a little bit more challenging for them to take all of these plane trips everywhere. Like the A-10, for example, there are no FBS football programs in the A-10. So, you know, I guess UMass would be the only one. So, you know, it's really challenging for those teams to have the travel budget that these major conference schools have. So that's why when we were going through and we were going conference by conference, looking at where these stronger home court advantages are, a lot of the stronger ones are in those low and mid-major conferences because, you know, there are schools that, as you mentioned, are off the beaten path. There are schools that are harder to travel to. You know, maybe these conferences are a little bit more spread out because, you know, it can be a little bit challenging if you're a small school to get a conference affiliation. So while people like to think about, I mean, Phog Allen is a great, you know, home atmosphere, it's probably not the same level of home court advantage that some of these mid and low majors are, because those athletes are used to playing in big buildings and it's easy to get, you know, in and out of Kansas. And you know, there are just a lot of different things in those big conferences that don't really apply to the smaller ones.
Yeah, definitely. There's the bigger conferences, it's harder to have a really big home court advantage in those bigger conferences. Small conference, if you're, you know, elevation or way away from everybody else, you have an odd shooting backdrop, you're going to have a lot bigger home court advantage. You know, Denver, as I've talked about in the past, is my highest home court advantage. There's a lot of reasons for that. Elevation, long ways away from everybody else. You know, they catch people in some really bad spots, which, you know, you have to remember that when you're looking at each game, too, you want to see who the opponent is. Is that team used to playing there? Is that team closer to there than the average team? You know, you can certainly you can have a home court advantage that's a really big home court advantage, and then, you know, you have an opponent that's more used to it where it kind of makes it a little bit less of a factor than it would in another spot. But certainly the smaller conferences are the conferences where you're going to find the really big advantages. The bigger conferences, you can still have a good home court advantage. Certainly Phog Allen's a good one. I give them 3.5, 4 points, depending on the spot. Now, one thing I'll say about a place like Kansas is, you know, I think it's if you watch Kansas games, a lot of people talk about this, and I'm not, you know, trying to bash Kansas in any way. I like the Kansas program. But, you know, it can be hard to get a foul called if you're the other team versus Kansas sometimes in a spot like that. And I think that's just because officials are humans. You know, I mean, it's a big environment. You know, it's hard to rile up the crowd when you're in that kind of spot. But it's something you got to keep in mind. You know, those kind of things happen in a place like Kansas. They happen in other big places as well that have really good fan support. So that's another small factor that goes into it.
Well, let's get into some of these quick hitters here. We got a lot of notes to talk about, including the fact that you mentioned that you've been struggling a little bit here in college basketball recently, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that the over still on a really good run.
You know, I keep wondering when this is ever going to happen, it's going to flip back the other way. You just keep thinking, I know the odds makers have pushed the numbers up somehow. I see it. And, you know, I'm trying not to play all unders, but I end up playing more unders than I do overs, and it's just not working out. I mean, there have been some really, really high-scoring games here in the last few days. The over went 61-40 on Saturday and 12-6 on Sunday. And last week, 59% of games went over the posted total. That's really amazing because it's just happening every single week. You know, usually you don't see that. So this year has been a lot different. Obviously, the college basketball, the NCAA has kind of decided they wanted more scoring. That's why we've seen some of the rule changes that we have. And it's made it harder for me as a handicapper, just to be honest, because, you know, for a long time, things were the same. And then last year they come in and they change the shot clock and they're going to start calling more fouls with the hand checks and things like that. And then obviously you get those late game situations. And I'll just give you a couple examples. Yesterday I had Syracuse and Georgia Tech under 136. And they actually scored 41 points in the last 5:55 of that game to push. That was one of those where, you know, 41 points in 5:55 is pretty ridiculous. I mean, you know, you get a game that's a 10, 11-point game with 5:55 left, and you're hoping that it doesn't get to that dreaded 7-point spread where it's just going to be fouling for forever. And, you know, sure enough, you know, Syracuse gets down by 6, 7 points, and it's just an epic foul fest, and you can add up the points really fast. Actually, the biggest amount of points I've ever seen in a game in the last 5.5 minutes was Saturday night. I had the under in the Fullerton and UC Davis game. They scored 48 points in 5.5 minutes. They scored 39 points in the last 3 minutes of that game. That's pretty amazing to be able to score almost 40 points in 3 minutes. It's also really hard to handicap something like that. You know, all along, you've got the right side with the under, and it just gets into that range where it's just going to be epic. It makes it really discouraging to play unders, but I have to say, I've gotten some emails about this, and certainly it looks like, you know, you should just take every over. I still think that's going to be dangerous at some point. When that's going to be, I don't know. I do know that going back and looking at some databases, March has actually been better for the over than the under in the past. So, you know, I'm going to be careful with still looking for the overreaction, because overs have done pretty well in March, especially in the games where it doesn't really matter to the two teams. So keep that in mind when you're looking at it. Two teams who don't have a lot to play for in the month of March, probably a better spot to look for an over. Two teams that have a lot to play for is a better spot to look for an under.
Well, and what's really unfortunate here is because you're a professional handicapper, you can't just simply make an adjustment and play first half unders in games where you like the under, because that can't be tracked. So you have to stick with the full game under, even though you know that there is this fairly high likelihood, at least this season, of getting one of those foul fests, one of those games where the last 5 minutes takes 45 minutes. It's just a steady parade to the line. So that's the unfortunate thing, because what you can do, what our listeners can do at least, is, you know, look at some of those games where the full game under looks pretty good. Maybe go first half under. Maybe you open up a middle for the second half over. Maybe you can guarantee a 2-1 type of thing there. You know, that's obviously a tool that's available to our listeners, but you know, your hands are kind of tied with the nature of the industry.
Yeah, it's a really good point that you just made there. Actually, I looked at the last 10 unders that I've lost. 8 of those 10 first half unders won. That's certainly really frustrating when you go back through and you look at it and you say, man, look how good these games were looking, and you know, the first half under would have won. It's definitely difficult as a handicapper because, you know, a lot of people don't want first half plays, and almost none of the websites track those things. So, you know, you have to go with the full game, even though, you know, if you play that first half, you're taking away that whole 7-point spread thing. At the end of the first half, nobody's fouling on purpose. So it's certainly something to keep in mind for listeners going forward, though. If you like a full game, if you think it's going to be in that spread of 6, 7, 8 points, you probably do want to look at that first half under.
And I think what's shitty about it, I mean, outside of the fact that, you know, you have a bad record to show for it, is that you're handicapping in the first half and you're gambling in the second half. And that's where the problem is, because that's when you hit so much variance. And like I said, there's really not a whole lot that you can do about it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a good way to say it. You know, I hadn't really thought about it that way. But yeah, you're handicapping what you think you're handicapping the full game. But you know that if it gets into that spread, it doesn't really even matter how many points they've scored earlier in the game. You know, I've started trying to not even pay attention to how many points have been scored in the first half, in the first 30 minutes of the game, because if it gets in that last 5 minutes and it's in that spread, it's not going to matter how low it was earlier. It's still going to go over. I mean, that's how bad it's cutting. I mean, you either want it, if you have the under, you want it to be so close that they don't foul, or you want it to be a blowout to where people don't realize, you know, don't think that they can foul and stay in the game. But, you know, even that is hard to predict. I mean, you could say with a spread of 6, 7, 8 points that you don't want to play a full game under, and I have been doing more of that. But even these games that are set at pick'em, you know, a decent amount of them are going to end up in that spread of 5, 6, 7, 8 points. And that's, like you said, that's more gambling when you get to the second half. And it's certainly hard. You know, something to keep in mind for listeners is that, you know, as we get into March, we're getting real close to March Madness. We're going to be in conference tournaments and then Madness, which is certainly really looking forward to that and to talking about that. Teams are not going to want their season to end either. So those second half overs may have some value in games that you think could be in that 7, 8, 9, even 10, 11 point spread range, because people are going to foul like crazy in their last game. They don't want it to be over.
Well, one other thing to remember here as we get closer to March Madness, and this is a note that you sent over to me here, road teams have been doing pretty well over the last 5 years in terms of covering the number. You've got some thoughts as to why.
Yeah, 52.5% of the time the road teams have covered in the last 3 years in the last month of the regular season. You know, I tried to think about this one a little bit. You know, why is this the case? first of all, road teams have covered better than home teams have in many years in a row. Overall, you know, the road team's about 51%. If you go back and look at the past 10 years, obviously that's not good enough, but it is a really big sample size. The road team's been pretty consistently better than the home team. I think the average public bettor likes to bet the home team more often than the road team. And I also speculate the reason for the road team doing better at the end of the season. I think there's more pressure on the home team this time of the year. You know, that senior night, the last game at home, I've always had a hard time handicapping games like that. But over time, I've started to think that last game at home is actually not a good thing for that team. You know, you put a lot of pressure on yourself. It's your last chance. The other team comes in there playing freely. It seems like more often than not they cover. You know, obviously there's going to be plenty of teams that do well in that spot at home in their last game. But if you think about it, it does make some sense that, you know, that home team has more pressure on them. Say you've had a rough season and you really want to finish with a win, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. The road team comes into there just playing freely. The home team puts a lot of pressure on themselves. It's their last game in front of all their, you know, their fans, family, things like that. It makes some sense to me that the road team would do better in that spot.
Another possible theory, and it would take a lot of back testing to figure this out because you'd have to go on a game by game basis, is that because we're late in the year, because teams have played a long schedule, I wonder if odds makers are shading that home court advantage figure just a little bit, maybe an extra half point or an extra point, something like that. Just assuming that, you know, it's tiring to go out on the road, play your 28th, 29th game of the season, something like that. You know, maybe it's a back-to-back road trip late in the year, some kind of thing like that. So maybe those lines are a little bit inflated simply because of the point that we're at here in the calendar.
Yeah, I think that could be the case, and I think it also could be the case because the odds makers know that the public is more involved this time of the year. And like I said, I think the public likes taking the home team more than they like taking the road team. You can look at the amount of bets on a certain game, and you can see that it does seem that that's the public likes to play the home team. So, yeah, between the fact that the odds makers may give you that extra half point based on, you know, they've had a long road trip or, you know, they think they could be worn out. And then also the fact that they know that the public's going to take the home team more. I think those are both reasons that you could get a little bit of an inflated line now.
Well, let's get into our quick hitters here, talking about some injury stuff. We've got four big injuries to discuss here. And of course, you know, late in the year, injuries can be really significant, especially if these are go-to players come conference tournament time. So what's the first one on your list here for this week?
Well, first up, Yonte Maiden at Georgia, out indefinitely with a knee sprain. This team has been so close this year. Honestly, I feel really bad for Georgia. I watched the end of that game the other night against Kentucky. Thought they had that game. J.J. Frazier had a tremendous game there. Kentucky pulls that game out late. But really, the bigger loss for them was losing their big man, who means so much to the team. I mean, this is a team who really has been so close so many times this year. You know, Georgia, their record 15-12. People have been talking about them as being a team that could still make the NCAA tournament, but it's going to be hard for them unless they pick up a marquee win, and they don't really have any teams left on the schedule that are really marquee wins. They probably have to win out and do so in convincing fashion. That's going to be harder to do without their, you know, arguably their best player. I'm obviously, J.J. Frazier and him are the two best players. Maiden is a really good rebounder, a good defender. He blocks a lot of shots. It's going to be hard for them to do it without him, I think.
So in terms of that, because they're down a big, are they going to speed up the tempo a little bit, you think, or do they keep doing what they've been doing?
You know, Georgia's a little bit of a hard team to figure out as far as tempo. They're one of the teams that I don't really like betting on totals with them because they seem to play to the opponent's style. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what they're going to do. I'm more a wait-and-see approach. They play one team next, Alabama, that plays very slowly, and then they're going to play LSU, Auburn, and Arkansas, who all like to run. So I would expect in those last three games, if Maiden's not playing there, they'll probably be running in those games. And whether it's good for the points that he's out or bad for the points, it's hard to say because obviously he's their best defender, but he's also a good, solid low post scorer. So I'm not sure. It's one of those cases that kind of a wait and see approach for me.
Well, we'll stay in the SEC here. Pretty big injury for Texas A&M.
Yeah, DJ Hogue out for the year for Texas A&M. Now, Texas A&M, to me, is a team that has potential, but they just can't score well enough. And Hogue is one of those guys that can go out there and get his own shot. And they don't really have other guys who can do that. You know, Davis is a good big guy for them. But DJ Hogue was an important player for Texas A&M. Texas A&M, obviously, way down from last year. They lost a lot from last year. And now this is a tough hit for them. I do expect Texas A&M to struggle here down the stretch. And if anything, I'd look to go against them.
A couple more injuries here for this week. We're going to go a little bit deeper under the radar here, beginning with the Southern Miss Golden Eagles.
Yeah, Kari Price, who used to play for Dayton, is now out for the year. Now, Kari Price, certainly the best player on Southern Miss's team, not even close. And without him, this team has really struggled to be competitive this year. When Price was in there, Southern Miss covered the spread a few games in a row. And I think this is a really big injury here because, you know, Southern Miss is one of those teams that they're undermanned even with him. They're way undermanned without him. Southern Miss, a program that's really gone through a lot here. They just don't have enough good players. And Southern Miss is obviously going to be a hard team to go against now because the odds makers know how good Kari Price is and how important he is to the team being the guard. But I still would say just don't back Southern Miss. I don't think it's worth it at this point. It's going to be hard to go against them because the lines are going to be so inflated. But I just don't think that they're going to be a good team to back.
One more here, and we're going really under the radar to the Colonial here in this one. Towson, and this is a really, really strange situation. Now, they have won two straight without John Davis, but what do you think that they look like going forward?
Well, I think Towson could be a good team to fade here coming up. John Davis is a really good player, great rebounder, excellent rebounder for that team, and he's really not that big, but he's a great rebounder. Team's been okay without him so far, but both of those games were at home. I think Towson's going to have some tough matchups coming up here. Towson, one of their biggest strengths has been dominating on the glass. I don't think they're going to dominate on the glass the way they have been in the past. I think their upside's a lot more limited now. Towson's going to be a solid team because they still play good defense. But, a little bit of their scoring is out for sure, and a lot of their rebounding's out. And I think that we could get some value going against them coming up.
And for those that don't know, John Davis was shot in a drive-by. He stuck around in Philadelphia. There was I don't know if it was like a baptism or something like that for his son. So he was able to stick around there in Philadelphia after the team won at Drexel and happened to get shot in the leg. And obviously it's a good thing that the situation wasn't worse. But, like he's out now for the foreseeable future. And by the way, their win on Saturday over James Madison was senior day. And Davis, of course, a senior. So, a little bit of a bittersweet thing there. So I imagine there was probably some money that came in against Towson based on that angle, but we will see what happens with them going forward. Before we get into some games here for this week, we've got a long list of those to talk about. There's a system that you want to mention here that's been pretty profitable with regards to underdogs.
Yeah, you don't get this spot too often, but I want people to pay attention to this going forward. Underdogs in February who've had 6 days or more off, playing against a team that has had 3 days or less off. So you're trying to get the better rested team here in the month of February, are 58.1% in the past 3 years. Now, remember, this has to be at least 6 days off. So basically, you're looking for a team that's had a week off, a Saturday to Saturday type spot. And then you go against the team that just played a couple, 2 or 3 days ago. In those spots in the past 3 years, you're 58.1% ATS. There are going to be some of those spots here in the next week or two, so keep an eye on that one. I do think that that's a winning long-term system that's going to keep winning. I can't say that it's going to keep winning at 58.1%, but I do think that that's going to be one that wins at a high enough percentage that it would be worth it to follow it.
Yeah, and like you said, rest is a very big deal here at this time of the year, and it comes at a point where there are quite a few teams that aren't necessarily able to get it. So, if this situation does pop up, then it's definitely one that you can look advantage of. Let's talk about some of these games here. We got a long list of games. You, of course, selected these for different reasons. Sometimes we talk about pace wars. Sometimes it's bad situational spots. But these are all games that you can have on your radar here this week. And, of course, for our listeners out there, all of these are price dependent. We'll talk about you know, where we think some of these numbers may end up. But just because we've talked about them doesn't mean that they're necessarily a play. Beginning with the A-10 matchup on Tuesday night, between Davidson and Richmond. Now, Richmond last week played George Mason. That was a game that I actually previewed over at bangthebook.com. It was a look-ahead spot to playing VCU. Richmond blown out in that game. Well, they played VCU over the weekend. What happened, and how can it impact this spot here against Davidson?
Yeah, full disclosure, I had Richmond in that game against VCU. In the past, you know, grabbing the at the time, it was 3.5 points. The line actually went up to 5.5. Not very often have lines moved against me lately, but that one did. You know, it's been frustrating for me when I've been losing here lately in college basketball. I've gotten a ton of closing line value. I mean, just massive. Some of these totals have been, you know, 6-8 points in my direction, and then they lose. And nothing's more frustrating as a handicapper to be on a losing streak where you're getting so much closing line value. That's certainly something that's hard to take. But in this case, what happened was Richmond was actually leading right before halftime against VCU. 35-29 with about 4 minutes till halftime. And they didn't score another point the rest of the half. VCU goes on a 7-0 run, leads by a point at halftime, kind of keeps their momentum that they had going into halftime and just kind of dominates the second half. VCU shot the ball really well in that game. Richmond couldn't shoot it well. That's a big loss for Richmond. I mean, that's a game that they had to have circled. I mean, they've lost now 3 or 4 times in a row to VCU. That's their big rival, you know, both from Richmond. So that game was a tough one to take for them. Now they have another game here against Davidson. Davidson, to me, has been a big underachiever this year. Davidson 14-11 on the year. Davidson's a pretty experienced team. They have a lot of experienced leaders on their team. Jack Gibbs, their best player, Peyton Aldridge, you know, some seniors and juniors that are their best players. They just haven't shot the ball that well this year. You know, in the past, Davidson's been a team that could really shoot it well. So far this year, they're 33.7% from long range. And it's a team that shoots a lot of threes. So they've lost a lot of games because they haven't shot well from three. I do think, though, that Davidson's one of those teams that's set up that they could certainly make a good run at the end of the season, and it wouldn't surprise me. They have a good coach in Bob McKillop. Like I said, they have some good veteran leaders. And I think that Davidson is probably the right side here. Depending on the price, I will look to play Davidson here against Richmond. Davidson's won some games on the road against decent teams here. They beat St. Joe's by 15. They just beat UMass by 5. This is just a team that has been playing much better here of late. And I do think that down the stretch, Davidson could be a good team to back. And I think Richmond's in a bad spot here. You know, Richmond's been an inconsistent team this year. They have some good wins. They have some really bad losses. And I'd rather be on the Davidson side at plus money. I certainly think that Richmond will be favored here. How much will they be favored? You know, I'm not sure. I'm hoping I can get at least, you know, I would like to get 2.5 points, something like that. But we'll see what the odds makers do as far as adjusting Richmond in this one.
Another game that you want to talk about here, we'll go to the American Athletic Conference. UConn and Houston. Give you a second there to get that out. UConn and Houston, I mean, these are two teams that have played already here once this season, which is always an interesting angle because you're seeing a lot of teams playing each other for the second time. Maybe they'll get a third time in the conference tournament as well. But maybe that first game between these two teams this year, a little bit misleading.
Yeah, and apologies. I'm still trying to get my voice totally back. Certainly a lot better than I was last week, so thankful for that. But bear with me here the rest of the way. Seem like I'm kind of losing my voice a little bit. But, yeah, UConn's certainly playing a lot better than they were earlier in the season. And, you know, UConn has a good coaching staff. I think Kevin Ollie has really proven himself. Even though he's a fairly new coach, he's certainly a good coach. There's no doubt about that. And Houston earlier this year just absolutely crushed UConn. They were up 44-18 in the second half at UConn. You know UConn has to remember that game. I like this game. This is probably my favorite one we're going to talk about. I like UConn plus the points. I think maybe 7-8 points, catch it with UConn, is what the look ahead would be. I have to say, I'm a little bit worried that the odds makers are going to shade this toward UConn because UConn's played well of late on the road. They beat UCF, who's a decent team on the road. They beat Temple yesterday on a last-second buzzer beater. Houston's coming off a game where they lost to SMU. That was a game that they had circled, obviously. Houston and SMU pretty close to each other. They've been rivals here in the past. I think that, SMU was just too good for Houston. But Houston's a team that, you know, they're a solid team. They're not the team that should be laying a big number against UConn. So I'm hoping they are. If this is in a 5 or 6 point range, then I'll have to rethink it. But if it's 7 or 8 points, I'll certainly be on UConn here. You got to remember, too, Jalen Adams didn't play in the first game between these two. Jalen Adams is UConn's best player. I think UConn has plenty of reasons to be up for this game, and I like them in this spot.
You know, and I think I want to elaborate a little bit on something that you said there that I thought was pretty interesting about this line maybe being shaded a little bit in UConn's direction. And what's interesting about that is that, you know, you also kind of mitigate a little bit of possible sharp exposure, because we know sharp players certainly want to side early on with the underdogs. You know, they'll play chalk if they need to. Certainly there's sometimes some value in chalk. But in a game like this, with a fairly misleading first matchup, sharp players like yourself are going to want to look to play UConn. Public players will want to look to play UConn because UConn is a known commodity. Houston, not so much, at least when it comes to basketball. They're certainly more well-known for football. So shading the line is kind of a twofold thing there for the odds makers. So I do wonder if you will get the line value you're looking for there.
Yeah, no, I do too. I'm a little bit worried. And I have to say, I don't think that this is one of them where you should wait. Because like you said, you know, UConn is a public team. You know, UConn hasn't been great this year. But UConn is a heck of a lot more public team than is Houston in college basketball. So when that line opens and you have sharp players taking UConn, you get the public piling in on UConn, I don't think you're going to get as good a price close to game time as you will when it first opens. So I'll be looking at the opener here, and hopefully it's good enough. We'll see.
Well, we'll stay on Wednesday night here, and I don't know, this might be kind of a big game, I guess, between Louisville and North Carolina down in Chapel Hill. ESPN's got the broadcast for this one. As things currently stand, a couple of top 10 teams. We'll see what things look like here when the rankings come out. But, you know, big-time clash here in the ACC.
Yeah, definitely. Louisville comes in 22-5 on the year. North Carolina 23-5 on the year. So, I mean, these two teams are excellent teams. There's no doubt about it. I think North Carolina has the higher upside than does Louisville. Louisville has these teams that seem to have an edge on them. Rick Pitino said in the past that Virginia is their kryptonite. That's certainly been the case in the past. Obviously, North Carolina plays nothing like Virginia. So, you know, we're going to get a fast-paced game here. You have two teams that are both very good on defense, but both really like to run. So it's an interesting thing. It's a little bit hard to play a total in a game like this because they could shoot poor percentages from the floor because both teams are very, very good on defense. Both teams have a lot of length on defense. It's hard to shoot over them. Both of these teams are really good on the glass. I think that's the most important thing in this game is to watch the rebounding matchup. North Carolina is a tremendous rebounding team, the best offensive rebounding team in the country. Louisville is very good as well. Louisville is actually they're 13th in offensive rebounding. So not as good as North Carolina, but they're certainly very good. I think whoever wins the rebounding war in this one will probably win the game. I don't necessarily have a play on this game. I don't have anything that I even lean that much. I think North Carolina, like I said, has a little bit higher upside than does Louisville. So if you're talking like from a future standpoint, I like North Carolina better than I do Louisville. And this game, you know, North Carolina is going to be favored by maybe 4.5 points, something like that. And I think it's going to be a fair line.
I don't know if you got a chance to watch this game on Saturday night between North Carolina and Virginia. I mean, obviously you look at the final score and you can see how that one went with North Carolina winning 65-41. The Tar Heels played well on defense, but I thought Virginia was really disinterested. They settled for a lot of long jump shots, and that's not really the strength of Tony Bennett's team. So do you feel like that performance is going to be built into the line here a little bit, or is it just going to be chalked up as, you know, Virginia was just overmatched?
I don't know. I do agree with you. I watched a little bit of that game. Virginia took way too many threes in that game. Actually, they were 2 for 20 on threes. That's obviously terrible, 10%. And second of all, that's not what Virginia usually does. They usually drive the hoop pretty well. North Carolina's length bothered them in that spot. I think that, you know, North Carolina is a tough matchup for Virginia to start with. Virginia doesn't have as much talent as does North Carolina. Obviously, you know, 65-41, you don't expect that kind of score. I think that that will probably give us, you know, or give it maybe an extra half point toward North Carolina in this game. So if you like Louisville, maybe that gave you a little bit extra line value. You know, maybe 4.5 points is a little too small. Maybe it'll be 5.5 points, something like that. North Carolina's going to be favored here. I don't really have any lean on this game, but I think it's going to be a really good game to watch.
Well, this will be an underrated game here on Thursday night. We'll go out to the Summit League. Fort Wayne Mastodon, the IUPUI Jaguars. This is a game that you keyed in on a few weeks ago. You absolutely nailed this spot. It was a phenomenal call by you. What do you think happens here in round two?
You know, I'm really looking forward to this game. I don't know if there's going to be any way I can watch this game or not. If there is, I want to. But IUPUI, you know, I talked about this a few weeks ago. IUPUI's coach did some really classless things last year against Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne remembered that. Man, I mean, they really put it on him in that last game. I mean, a 103-73 game, just, you know, just an epic beatdown. And Fort Wayne played as fast as they've ever played this year, the entire game. And, I don't blame them at all. They didn't take their foot off the gas at all. They just went ahead and stomped them. So now what happens here? They go back to IUPUI. You know, IUPUI is not as good as Fort Wayne. Their upside's not as high as it is for Fort Wayne. I think this line's going to be about pick 'em. You know, I don't know. I my slight lean here is probably Fort Wayne. I'm just thinking that they still have some, you know, they'd love to do it on IUPUI's floor and you know, they kind of embarrass them. IUPUI, on the other hand, I mean, this is not their last home game. They played South Dakota on Saturday at home. But still, this is the one that IUPUI wants more than anything else. So I think both teams are going to be really highly motivated in this game. Like I said, maybe a slight lean to Fort Wayne. But I think there's some really interesting, you know, motivational factors that go into this game that made it an interesting one to talk about.
Yeah, I think when I said round two, I kind of meant a little bit tongue-in-cheek because I don't know. A brawl would not surprise me in this game if we happen to get one, especially with what happened there in the first meeting this year. But, you know, it's one of those games. If you get a chance to watch it, it is on the Watch ESPN app. So, you know, should be a good one there in the Summit League on Thursday night. Let's go out to the Big Sky. Let's give the Big Sky a little bit of love here this week on the show. Weber State and Eastern Washington. What do you see from this game?
Well, first of all, when you talk about the Big Sky, you have to know the Big Sky Conference to know that most teams like to play fast here in the Big Sky. These two teams don't really play that fast, but just about everybody in the Big Sky is good at offense and nobody's good at defense. This is really a tough conference to play unders in. I actually went back and looked at this. The Big Sky has been a tremendous over conference over the years. I'm not surprised when you watch their games. There's almost no defense being played. Weber State in the past has been good at defense. This year they're not. Weber State's number one in the conference in offensive efficiency. They're number nine in defensive efficiency. Weber State's biggest weakness, though, is rebounding. Eastern Washington's certainly a better rebounding team than is Weber State. Eastern Washington has a really good big guy in Jacob Wiley. Wiley is one of those guys that makes some really quick low post moves. This is his first year at Eastern Washington. He's just a really good player on the inside. In the first game, you go back and look at the first game, Weber State won by 3 points at Weber State. Eastern Washington comes home here. Eastern Washington has a really good home court advantage, better than average. Weber's a veteran team that's played good on the road, though. I think Weber State can give them a game here. I think if you get a low enough number, based on the first game being a little lower scoring than average, the over could be a good play here because it won't be surprising at all if both teams shoot a really high percentage. So I'd say my strongest lean in this game is the over, but more than anything, I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit of Big Sky.
Wiley had 36 in the first meeting between these two teams, 36 of his team's 67, actually. So he had a really huge game there. What about the bounce back factor for Weber State here? Because they lost at home to North Dakota. North Dakota with a perfect sweep of Weber State. North Dakota now in first place. in the Big Sky regular season standings. What do you think about a bounce back angle here for Weber State? I mean, it's not a publicly driven conference, obviously, as we know. Is that something that'll be factored into the line at all in this spot, or is there not a whole lot of reason in your mind for the odds makers to worry about that with what will be a pretty low handle on this game?
Yeah, I don't think there'll be too much of an adjustment there. I think that, you know, these are two teams that both are at the, you know, they're both still in the race when it comes to the Big Sky. You know, Weber State 11-3, Eastern Washington 10-4. You know, this is a conference where home teams have done really well also. You know, Eastern Washington's 13-1 at home. Weber State's 9-2 at home on the year. You know, this is, you know, Weber losing that game at home to North Dakota certainly was a big hit to them. But I think Weber State has the type of team that it wouldn't be surprising for them to bounce back. I don't know that the odds makers will adjust it very much. You know, we could talk about it here. I think it's an interesting game. But, you know, when you look at, like you said, the handle on this game, it's not going to be much. There's some big games that night, and not very many people are going to be paying attention to that game.
Well, a quick turnaround for the Kentucky Wildcats after that close win over Georgia over the weekend. They go to Missouri on Tuesday night. Then they've got the stage set for a matchup with Florida at home on Saturday. Florida surging right now. They're playing very well. Didn't play all that well in Stark Vegas over the weekend, but yeah, that was kind of a tough spot for them, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a second. But how are you looking ahead to this one?
Well, I mean, obviously Kentucky has some revenge because Florida really took it to them in that first game. You need to know whether Canyon Berry's healthy here. He's questionable for their next game. I assume he'll be playing here by Saturday when they play each other. I think that, you know, Florida-Kentucky is always going to be a really good game. I don't think Kentucky is quite as good as we thought they were earlier in the year. Certainly not saying Kentucky's a bad team. They're certainly a very good team. But early in the year when they were really just stomping everybody, you know, Kentucky was thought of, you know, maybe the best team in the country, maybe second best team. I don't think they're quite that good. I think the SEC is always weak in college basketball, at least lately they have been. So that's a little bit tough to gauge how good a team is. But Florida is certainly very good this year. Canyon Berry's been a huge addition to this team. Florida's always been good on defense. And I think Michael White's an underrated coach there. He did a really good job at La Tech when he was there. And now Florida's really good at defense. Last year they weren't very good at offense. Now they're pretty good at offense as well. You know, what will this line be? You know, probably Kentucky favored by 3 or 4 points in this game. And I think that alone tells you quite a bit. You know, we'll see what this line actually comes out at. But I don't think Kentucky's going to be favored by as much as you would think they'd be favored by, as long as Caden Berry's going to play. If he doesn't play, they'll be favored by a lot more than that. But, you know, who I like in this game, no strong lean for me. I really don't think I'll bet this game. I will watch this game. I think it'll be one of the best games of the week to watch.
Did you make any sort of power ratings adjustment for Florida with the John Ebogunu injury?
Yeah, just a small one point change. Florida has pretty good depth, and they're a team that plays such good defense that they can stand up to some injuries. But yeah, it's certainly worth something. And, you know, this is a game where him being out could hurt them.
One more game to talk about here for this week on the show. We'll head out to the Big West. Long Beach State, UC Davis. UC Davis has now lost first place in the conference regular season standings. That belongs to UC Irvine. What do you see from this game coming up here on Saturday night?
Well, you know, UC Davis is a team that is a really good defense. They're not very good on offense. Excuse me. I'm trying to make it here. We're almost made it through. But UC Davis, a team that plays really good defense, they're not very good on offense. Their efficiency is pretty poor. Long Beach State, we've talked about them in the past. It's, you know, one of those teams that plays such a really difficult non-conference schedule. I think it's too difficult. You know, it's good to schedule up, but those ridiculous road trips take a lot out of a team. Long Beach State's obviously better than their record, though. UC Davis is a good team, a good defense, not very good on offense. What I like about this game is I like the under. You know, as I said, You know, if it gets in that certain spread, we could be in trouble. And I think Davis will be favored by a few points. So it is in that range where I would worry. But I think if this number is high enough, I'll have to take the under. You know, say if it's over 150, I have to take the under in this game. The pace is going to be quick, but both of these teams are pretty good at defense. And UC Davis has a way of playing low-scoring games, even though they're playing fast, because their offense isn't good at all. Their defense is very good. I think, you know, based on what these teams have done in the past years and based on what the odds makers think of these two teams, I think the line will be inflated as far as the total. So I like the under in this game.
Well, a lot of good thoughts. We covered a lot of different topics here today with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, what's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, honestly, you know, there's been less going on than what I was hoping there would be. And it's just with everything going on here at the house with everybody being sick and trying to get over it. But there's going to be more going on coming up. The newsletter, sign up for it. If you haven't already, you can go to huntersportspicks.com and sign up for that. I'm going to be sending some premium plays over to newsletter subscribers for free. So check that out if you haven't already. And then there's going to be a lot coming up for March Madness. So stay tuned for that.
Well, Kyle, we appreciate your time as always at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Well, there you have it. There's this week's elongated handicapping the hardwood segment there with Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard of wagertalk.com, also Sports Cheat of wagertalk.com for our Tuesday meeting show. Plenty of NBA, plenty of college basketball coming your way. Who knows? I don't know if we'll mix in some MLB or not, but we'll have plenty of things to talk about with you here on that Tuesday meeting show. Coming up Wednesday here on the broadcast, we'll have our Wednesday Wagering with S. Reynolds segment. We'll see what else. I may talk some NHL or something like that here coming up on that Wednesday show. But we've got another golf event here this weekend. That is the Honda Classic, so we'll be able to discuss that with Wes. Thursday, our Thursday meeting show with Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels, two professional handicappers, one from bradpowersports.com, the other from wagertalk.com. Now we'll see what happens with Friday's show. Hopefully we can get Rob Pozzola back on the broadcast here. It was kind of a tough spot for him last week coming back from a vacation. So hopefully we can get him on Friday's show. But that'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Make sure you head on over to DSI Sportsbook. Use that promo code BTB Radio. That gets you a $10 free bet just for signing up. An additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.